Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 99.
This week on the podcast, Adele Nazim wins the Oscar for Best Meme.
Russia's attempts to recreate the Soviet Union run into the predictable problem of nobody wanting to be in it.
Gays are now welcome in Arizona. Unsurprisingly, most of them still don't want to go there.
And the word Obamacare finally has a good connotation, so we're going to start using it again.
Military spending cuts and infrastructure spending? Is this real?
And a rainy LA could really use a local version of Kentucky's Noah's Ark Encounter theme park.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com. And then you can find us on Facebook and Twitter, because those are all places that we're hanging out.
All the time.
Never. We're not for a week, we haven't been anywhere. Just been sitting around.
Well, the Olympics got over.
Oh my God.
And then we sort of forgot.
Now that the Olympics are over,
it's like, what to do.
Yeah, I don't know how a person goes out,
right.
goes on with their life.
I know. Well, we at least had the Oscars this evening to sort of fill the void.
Exactly.
So that happened.
Yes.
I would contend not at all as exciting as the Olympics. But they happened.
It was no figure skating.
They still had to carry on go with it.
They couldn't cancel the Oscars.
just because they weren't
as exciting as the Olympics.
No, they couldn't.
Everyone got up, made their speeches. I would like to pretend like I have some thoughts about the matter.
Yeah.
But frankly, it just sort of proceeded as if it was going to. Nothing
really.
There
were really no real surprises. Yeah. No awesome things happened. There was some good singing. There was, I feel like the most exciting thing was John Travolta
mispronouncing
not being able to say
himself. I know. Yeah,
that was weird. That's already an internet sensation.
Yeah. So, yeah, we don't need to tell you about that.
No.
You've already heard that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But beyond that, that was the most baffling part of the show.
Right.
That we had to rewind it, watch it again. I mean, there was...
Yeah.
You couldn't understand what he was saying.
No, we had to figure out what he was saying, and we couldn't.
It sounded like he ended... Menzel became Nazim, first of all, which is a different word entirely, so that was really curious.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what he was even trying to do with the first name. I don't care. But in any case...
Well, he looks too weird to take seriously these days anyway, and then when he gets up to saying ridiculous things like that, it's just even worse. But I mean, like...
Every year at the Oscars, I'm reminded of how many more people are looking weird than usual.
Well, my mom was being reminded tonight.
She was like, all over Facebook about that.
Every post that she was like, what has so-and-so done with their face?
Yeah.
I'm like,
it's like everyone rushed out.
I love that's what my mom
surgery.
Took to.
I know.
Like...
Well, everyone
she hasn't seen
out.
Any of the movies.
They got plastic surgery right before the Oscars, so they'd look, quote, good for the Oscars. But instead, they looked weird.
Everybody looked weird.
And there's a lot of...
Even, like, normal-looking people, like Sandra Bullock, looked weird.
She was looking real weird.
Like,
what did she do to her face?
She doesn't need to be doing things to her face.
No, of course not. It's confusing.
She had a weird nose issue. She had a mouth, teeth situation going on.
Yeah.
Were weird things happening.
Weird things were happening to people who had no need for that level of weirdness.
No.
I feel like if she came just looking like herself, no one would be like, well, she's looking haggard. We'd just be like, well, there's Sandra Bullock.
Right.
Looking like herself.
Looking like herself.
We've all seen her in movies for years.
Yeah.
You know exactly what she looks like.
But I was mostly, I guess,
that's fine.
Happy. I don't know. I mean, like, I haven't seen 12 Years a Slave.
No.
Probably
I'm not
going,
going to.
I just can't. I mean, I'm sure it's a great piece of art. It's a great piece of film.
Filmmaking,
it's just one that I have no desire to see.
It's not
because I'm a racist.
It sounds
just because
stressful.
I don't want to sit through 2 hours of slavery.
It sounds depressing and stressful.
I'm sure it's an important film.
Yes.
And I get it, everybody.
Sure.
So you don't have to get on my case about it. Like, I see it. I'm just not going to see it.
I'm not going to see Gravity, ever.
It's too stressful for you.
That's stressful
for
me.
It.
Yeah.
That was great.
I
was really glad her won Best Original Screenplay.
We both
because
really
that
liked
was my
her.
Favorite thing from last year, I think,
exactly.
probably. And I also loved Gravity. I was glad Alfonso Cuarón won. He's also one of my favorite directors. And
he's done
so many things that I've loved.
And, I'm sure it was great, if you're not me.
Yeah.
And I can't even... I still mean to see a lot of them. You know, haven't seen Philomena.
Uh-huh.
Haven't seen... Well,
Philomena's great. I feel like this year, more than other years, I have seen a lot of them. I hadn't seen 12 Years a Slave, but I think maybe I saw every... And I haven't seen Nebraska, but I think I've seen everything else.
Nebraska's...
I have a screener for that.
Great.
I'd like to watch it. I'll love it, but I just haven't.
August Osage County for the reasons that you liked it, I think you will also
like
Nebraska.
I really did. I know a lot of people didn't like that.
I liked
the performances, but like, I really actually sort of
I've always wanted
that.
To see it's that play set, anyway. I think it would be a fun play to see in the theater.
Never do that again.
It was so much fun. I want to do it only. I want to do it forever.
Ellen was fun.
She's like a person that you hire when you're like trying not to, you know, make any waves.
Sure.
She'll make a joke. It mm-hmm. won't offend anyone.
Right.
She'll do things like ask everyone for $20 for pizza.
She'll show up in a, you know, the what was the Wizard of Oz, the, right. The Good Queen's
exactly.
costume.
She will take a selfie like with that. Every A-lister in Hollywood.
That was good. You know? We saw that post yeah. more than I'm comfortable with. But, I know. I mean,
it's, what are you going to do?
It happened.
It's, but beyond that, Oscars, they happened.
they did.
They didn't happen in Russia.
No, they didn't.
For reasons that we're about to explain.
Right.
That have to do more with Ukraine than yes. Russia proper.
Right.
But this week was a sort of turning point in the Ukraine situation.
Well, a lot of people sort of saw this coming because this sort of sounds crazy, but it's really what happened was that Putin was waiting until the Olympics were over to get involved.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. Literally within basically 48 hours of the closing ceremonies, he was getting ready to go to war.
Yeah. Well, Russia thinks they own Ukraine.
Correct.
So that's a thing that's going on. It's almost like they have this mentality like it's a colony of theirs. Like, everything's fine as long as you guys are cooperating, but if you're going to go pro-West on us, we can't have that.
No, we can't have that.
So basically, Putin suddenly decides that in order to protect, you know, Russian property and, you know, personnel,
right.
They might have to invade Ukraine.
And Russian speakers, I think he said something about Russian speakers. About Russian sort of like,
it was like,
Russian speakers everywhere.
That. Yeah, stop that right now. But so they might have to, and also to protect, you know, general Russian citizens that are wandering around Ukraine, which is like,
they're fine.
We're not, there are Americans in Ukraine right now. We're not invading to protect them.
No.
It's, there are Peruvians probably in Ukraine yeah. right now. Peru isn't. Yeah. Like, I mean, there's right. everyone.
We know why he's going in. We yeah. talked about it last week.
Exactly.
It's not to protect anybody.
From anything.
It's not to protect Ukrainian
Russians. It's because Ukraine is heading in a pro-West direction.
Right. They're heading in an EU direction. Yeah. And that's not what he's trying to get involved in.
No, exactly. So he told Obama. He sort of announced to the world and then also called Obama.
Mm-hmm. They talked for a long time. It must have been a really weird phone call. That was painful for both of them, I'm sure. Actually, Putin might have enjoyed it.
Obama probably felt pained because he probably doesn't like making people uncomfortable.
Right.
And Putin was probably just all about making everyone uncomfortable
yeah.
and not caring.
Yeah.
No, he doesn't give a damn.
Yeah, he probably got a
He's
lot
like
of things
an emperor,
off his
basically.
Chest.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he said that, you know, that they're going to intervene if Russian interests are compromised in some way. The U.S.
Right.
was like, we'll sanction you. The G8 countries are trying to figure out what to do. They're supposed to have a summit in
right.
Sochi coming up, but they've pulled out. Most of
right.
them have pulled out
A lot
out
of them
now.
Have pulled out. Yeah, I think like the U.K.'s pulled out. France is pulling out.
Yeah,
I think
like, the big guns are pulling
right,
out.
They're pulling out.
And there's only
big guns involved.
Exactly. Yeah. There's only eight of them. So.
Yeah.
And then some of them, like Britain was like, and we're not going to send anyone to the Paralympics. So, ha.
No.
You know, like making threats about the Paralympics.
Right.
The poor Paralympics really got shafted.
Yeah, I know, because they're going on right now, probably,
and
aren't they?
I've like, been to the Paralympics. They're really fun.
And that's what you said.
Yeah, I think they're probably more fun than, I mean, except in, like, figure skating, and they don't have figure skating in the Paralympics,
right, sure.
but, like, except in the sort of sports, like gymnastics and figure skating, that
right.
really require all of your limbs,
right.
the Paralympics is, I think, probably more exciting to watch
yeah.
for a lot of sports.
Probably, yeah.
So, skiing.
I know, they were showing clips of some of the Paralympics. And just, like, cool that they're, like, not just looks cool,
it's
like
cool
aesthetically,
that
but like
created
cool.
a contraption that allows people with no legs
and,
to ski down a hill
exactly
and do it
and
really
cool
fast.
That people are doing it
exactly.
Like,
yeah,
that's what I mean. It's just
it's everything
know.
About it's cool.
Yeah.
In any case, so after this 90-minute phone call, the White House released a press release.
Yes.
Saying that obviously they were against this plan of action.
Yeah. But they also sort of like warned them that they shouldn't be getting involved in the Ukraine's sovereignty.
Right.
Which, okay. I agree with that.
Yes.
But
don't we all?
Like,
are we one to talk?
No, we can't.
We can't be talking about
going
that.
Around telling people to get out of sovereign countries' business.
Yeah.
Like, that's not...
We're all up in everyone's business.
We've lost the right to tell anybody
yeah,
that.
We're unsovereigning nations up a storm
it's,
ourselves.
It's
what
who
we
are.
Do. It's,
yeah.
That's what you get when you believe yourself to be the policeman of the world.
Right. You get involved in sovereignty of
exactly.
sovereign nations.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the Ukrainians reacted really strongly to this because... To them, as a now pro-West, pro-EU country, their prime minister basically said, this is not a threat, this is a declaration
of war
to us.
Right. Yeah.
And that's, you know, the prime minister there is now pro-EU. Viktor Yanukovych has left.
He's gone.
He's long gone. No one knows where he is. He's disappeared into the ether.
Yeah.
So this this has been a major concern. There are still protests going on there. There's a lot of bizarre, like, pro-Russia protests going on that everyone thinks are being organized by Russia.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Russia also, like, seized this island.
Yeah, Crimea. Which is a peninsula.
Right. Like, and it's where they have a base. Moscow has a base there. And it's part, you know, they control the Black Sea, sort of. Like, they control all of the water access that Ukraine has. But they're also
getting, like, their ground troops, like, ready, like, right outside of, like, the border. They're preparing on the other side of the border. Like,
and there were no shots fired. They literally were just... Ukraine has a very underprepared army. So... Russia was just like, we want to take Crimea. And they were like, oh, okay.
I guess we have no choice. That's it.
Right, because no one really knows, you know, Ukraine doesn't have the ability to really fend off a Russian attack. So no one really knows what happens when they go in. Even if they were
organized, like, I feel like they're probably not in any sort of...
You need stuff to fend off a Russian attack.
Yeah.
They only have 130,000 troops armed. Their planes are barely ready to fly. They don't really have spare parts for their submarines. Like, they're just like some guys with guns hanging out.
Yeah.
Russia's got one of the biggest militaries in the world. So, like, you know, they know that they're no match, which is, I think, why they're sort of playing up the threat on the political end, because that's really the only authority that they have in this situation. But it's bonkers over there.
But it'll be interesting to see sort of, like, what happens, because, like, what... do we do? I mean, like, is this sort of, like, important enough to sort of, like, intervene on the side of the Ukrainians? Like, I just don't know. Are we going to let Russia sort of, like, take Ukraine?
Well, and once we intervene for the Ukrainians, like, are we also interfering with their sovereignty?
I don't know.
I mean, it's hard to know also because they have a history that we're not involved in. So, like, this is almost, like, sort of something that it needs to be dealt with between those two parties. Because we're not part of the Soviet, we were never part of the Soviet Union, so we're not really the right people to sort of, like, decide what happens.
Yeah.
But also, like, Russia doesn't get to decide they own Ukraine just because they sort of feel like it and they're mad.
Yeah.
Like, they sort of want to feel that way because they were sort of the epicenter of the Soviet Union, and so they feel like they actually own all of these countries. And if the, you know, they want to start their own EU, basically.
Yeah.
So part of this is their frustration.
They
want to
start the Soviet Union.
They want to start the Soviet Union, exactly. Part of this is their frustration that they're not getting to reform the Soviet Union because people are realizing that the EU is cooler than the ex-Soviet Union.
Right. You don't want to be in that.
No, that sounds terrible.
It's the worst.
It sounds like food shortages. It sounds like a lot of potatoes.
Yeah.
That's what I imagine. You're forced to eat potatoes. Sounds cold.
Yeah.
Sounds like you're going to have to be drunk to deal with everything. It sounds like you'll have to live in horrible block housing. And Kiev is beautiful, so Ukrainians aren't trying to get involved in that. No. Exactly.
They're probably fine with drinking vodka and eating potatoes.
No, they're doing that anyway. But
Yeah,
it sounds depressing. Soviet Union didn't sound like a fun place to live. No. It sounded like a kind of quirky, interesting place to visit, maybe. But, like... I'm not trying to live in the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
Neither are people in Ukraine.
No.
So,
John Kerry was up to some real diplomacy, though, because he just didn't hold back his words on this one, basically, because he said, you don't just in the 21st century behave in 19th century fashion by invading another country on a completely trumped up pretext. he's not. So John Kerry's not happy.
No. It doesn't sound like the administration as a whole is.
No.
Although all they've managed to do is, you know, make symbolic... Right. acts of disapproval. So no one really knows what happens when this situation actually gets underway. What we do know is that the Oscar coverage in Russia was canceled this.
Yes.
They had a lot of news to show.
That's what Russia did to us. Exactly. That was their symbolic.
Exactly. Fuck your Oscars.
Yeah.
We'll show them at midnight instead of at 9 in the morning or whatever. Like, they were going to air them live, but that would have been, like, a really early morning time in Russia.
Well, the only movies that other countries see of ours that are not English-speaking countries are, like, big, like Transformers, basically. Yeah. Like, no, so the Russians don't care about what's going on in the Oscars. They haven't seen Blue Jasmine.
No,
they don't like that, you know, like, they...
There are certain movies that do really well in the international market. They're all sort of, like, action thriller type
they're
movies.
They're movies that don't usually have many words in them.
Correct. A lot of effects and visuals.
They have things blowing up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they didn't care.
So they've maybe seen Gravity.
Right. They probably have. You don't.
They probably saw all the films that were nominated for sound editing.
Exactly. Probably a very important category
for them.
To the ex-Soviet Union.
Special effects makeup.
Exactly.
They've seen those movies.
Exactly.
Yeah. They saw they saw The Hobbit.
Right. They saw The Hobbit. All of the ones that I would never see.
Correct.
But in any case, they decided to cancel their coverage of the event.
Yeah.
Instead, they're going to show it at midnight on Monday. But they were basically. this was like state television. Like, first of all, Russian state television shows the Oscars. That's hilarious.
That is hilarious.
But also,
I wonder what else they show.
I know. I mean, I will say, I've never watched Russian state television, but I have watched Vietnamese state television.
Oh, is it good?
It is hilarious.
I bet.
There's just like, it's nonstop hilarity over there. Literally everything they show is ridiculous.
I love that.
Yeah, it's. And some really baffling choices as well. Sometimes they'll show, like, weird cartoons. They have weird game shows on.
Shows, they, I bet, are awesome.
They have, like, sometimes, like, Nova. Like,
oh, sure.
From PBS. Like, yeah, mysteriously will show. Like, random shit shows up.
I like that.
And the same Chinese state television. I don't know what it's like in China, but you can get it on certain cable providers.
Oh, yeah.
And it's hilarious, too. There's a lot of hilarious soap operas on those channels, like,
yeah,
a lot's going on.
Well, we have a lot of those channels here. I mean, like, we have a lot of, you know, we have Korean television. We
exactly
have,
like, we have the state channels are really the highlight of any sort of foreign TV watching. Yeah,
nice.
But in any case, so that's a tragedy that Russians will have to overcome if they want to own Ukraine.
Yeah. Now, nobody is loving this more than Sarah Palin right now, because
she's made her life.
Very few times does Sarah Palin get to be right about something.
And also, rarely does she get to reference her visual of Russia from her house.
She loves two things she loves. Being right, because it never happens.
Right.
And bringing up that she can see Russia from her house. She likes to joke about that a lot. So, she, in 2008, caught a lot of flack after Russia went into Georgia, because she said that if we sort of, like, didn't take sort of, you know, a more stern approach, basically, with Russia. And she was on Obama's case about it, because he was a senator at the time, and he sort of, like, didn't come out strongly enough, or whatever the hell she was talking about, whatever. Said that if we don't do something about Russia now, they're going to go into Ukraine next.
Right.
So she gets to be right.
By accident, she named a country in the region.
Bless her heart. Right. She knew, shockingly, that they had a border with Ukraine.
Right.
So and she that said it.
8 years in the future.
She strung a sentence together that had the words Russia and Ukraine in them collectively.
Yes.
And so
and just she, hung on long enough to make it right.
So she gets to be right. Sure. I'm going to give it to her.
Sure.
I mean, you can't say that she didn't say it.
No. Yeah.
And she's never right any other time. So you know what? I'm going to give a
well done.
Single well done, round Sarah of Palin. Applause for Sarah
you
Palin.
You said something 8 years ago that 8 years later, after looking like it was not accidentally came true. Yeah.
Yeah.
So good work. That's well done. If only you could have been accidentally predicting everything else that happened.
Yeah. But she did, of course, on her Facebook page. She said, yes, I could see this one from Alaska.
Mm-hmm. Ba-doom.
Right. And then she said, I'm usually not one to told you so.
Mm.
That's because you never get the opportunity to do so.
You have to be right to do that. I'm often one to told you so.
Yeah, and I don't mind doing it
either. No, exactly. I'm not afraid.
Uh-huh.
You have to have something that you were right about to do it. So that's... That's one of the reasons that we have so much more experience in that regard.
Yes.
Meanwhile, maybe you've been hearing about this Arizona bill.
Yes.
That basically would have, like, let any business or person effectively, like, discriminate against any gay person just because they felt like it.
Or religious person, was, like, and you were sort of hearing interesting parties come out against this. Like, Mitt Romney came out against this, and I don't think he was sticking up for the gays at all.
No,
I think
there's
a boatload of Mormons in Arizona, he doesn't want, you know, it was broadly worded, which is actually what Jan Brewer said when she vetoed this. You know, she had to veto this. When you and I talked about it last week, I was like, she's going to veto this.
Yeah.
There was a similar, I don't know why this bill got so much sort of, I don't know if it's just because of sort of like the strides we've made and sort of like, you know,
I think it was timing,
I think, because she's vetoed things similar to this in the past. My parents lived there and my mom was sort of like, I don't know why everybody's making such a big damn deal about this, because like, she's going to probably, you know, she let it sit around for a while, and she had to go out publicly and say that she was meeting with people about it. And she sort of, I think she bled it for all it was worth, certainly, which was sort of annoying. But, like, I have, you know, all of my friends on Facebook were, of course, like, panicking about this. And I was like, guys.
Right.
This is going nowhere fast.
Yeah.
She might be toying with everyone right now.
Right.
But
there's
like,
no way this bill is getting passes. Vetoed. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they passed it knowing that it would be. Arizona can't be a state that openly allows discrimination. That's unconstitutional.
No,
this bill's not constitutional.
Even some of the Republican state senators who voted for it days after within this last week anyway, got voted on a while ago, came out and said that they were against it. Like, people who had voted for it, like, realized once they knew what a giant clusterfuck it was.
Yeah.
Like, because a lot of, besides just, like, the general sort of, like, public's disdain for this bill that was going on, like, in the media and just sort of, like, you know, in life, there was a lot of, like, real serious things going on that would have been, like, damaging to Arizona just on the whole. Like, the NFL was put in, an official call to her office to, like, say that, like, they would consider pulling the Super Bowl. Apple is getting ready to break ground on a big plant there that's going to bring, like, 3,000 jobs or something like that. They were threatening to pull out. Like, it was a whole... It would have been a giant disaster just, like, for the entire state. There was a funny article that was floating around in The Onion or someplace like that, basically, that was, like, said, you know, Jan Brewer vetoes bill after realizing that gays have money and can buy things.
Oh, right,
you know,
I saw that.
It's like, and that totally. Was sort of like, you know, a ridiculous thing, but like also it true and
sums
real.
Up the issue here.
Yeah, exactly. But she was actually, I really, you know, I don't like Jan Brewer. No. Don't get me wrong here, but like every once in a while, bless her soul, she's
been making a couple right decisions here
she's
and there.
She's going a little Bullworth on people. She can't run for re-election, and she really, I thought, I liked. She was fairly strongly worded when she said that she was vetoing this because she really wasn't having it. She was mad at the legislature for doing this in the first place because she was like, they have better things to be doing. She was like, Arizona is not a state that should be discriminating against any types of people. She said that it has the potential to create more problems than it's worth. She said it could divide Arizona in ways we can't even imagine, and no one wants that. She sort of wasn't having it.
No. When she summed it up by saying religious liberty is a core American value and Arizona value, so is non-discrimination.
Yeah. Oh, and she also said, she was like, there's not been one example that I can
of
point
anyone
to
that's ever
of anybody. Yeah. Well, and that's what
been hurt by not having this policy.
Anderson Cooper said. There was that video that everybody was posting this week where he interviewed one of the state senators who's actually running for governor of Arizona. And this guy was one of the dumbest people I've ever seen on television in
not
my
surprised.
Life. And he is running for governor. I don't think he'll win because he made such an ass of himself. I mean, he was literally just eviscerated by Anderson Cooper. And I don't think Anderson Cooper's a real
genius.
Not
a rocket scientist.
But that was Anderson Cooper's point, and he kept taking him to task on it. And this guy had no answer. He was like, where is this
happening? Are people
happening?
Being forced
like, why
to
do you,
serve food in
why
restaurants
do you need,
to gay people?
Why
like,
do you need a bill?
Right.
Like, this is not a thing that's happening.
Yeah. Well, this is the kind of bill that you vote on if you're in the Arizona state legislature.
It's symbolic.
As a symbolic thing for your crazy voters.
Correct.
You know it's never going to see the light of day. You vote on one of these like once a month or once every few months or whatever, and you're like, oh, the crazy Tea Partiers will in my district will vote for me. And you expect that everyone, that it'll never get enough traction to get ahead anyway. You know it's not going anywhere. That's why all those people had to come out against it after they voted for it. They only voted for it because they knew it was going nowhere.
Right.
I mean, if you've been elected to office, you understand how office works usually.
But the problem is that I think you're absolutely right, but like, and they couldn't have necessarily foreseen that this was going to happen.
No, but you can't
like
vote that way. That's crazy.
You can't vote that
way.
What if
it passes?
Well, also, what if it passes, but like, also you sort of like end up having to deal with like this type of blowback.
Yeah.
This was heavy blowback here.
Well, I think that they've been sneaking around doing this for years, and so they were like, no one's going to notice if we pass this up. There's so much other shit going on in Arizona.
Some other states within the week pulled bills like this that they had also authored. So I think
there's a lot of legislatures that have legislation like this that is sort of going under the radar because it's so not viable that no one's even really considering it a real thing.
Yeah.
They're doing symbolic votes left, right, and center because it's easy to take a symbolic vote on a bill you know isn't going to pass because no one really bothers to raise the alarm. They're sort of like, oh, this is an unconstitutional bill that our governor's not going to sign. You guys go ahead and vote on that if you want.
Yeah, sure.
You be the idiots that voted on this, and maybe it will blow up in your face. It's not going to blow up in ours because we're not going to vote for it, and it's not going to pass. So this is the kind of thing that is happening, I think, everywhere.
Yeah.
And then it only takes one situation like this, which for unknown reasons becomes a big deal.
Right.
And then suddenly all of them, everyone's exposed as an idiot.
Right.
Which is what happened here.
Yeah, which is great.
And suddenly Jan Brewer has to step in and save the day, even though, I mean, this whole time she's, I'm sure, been vetoing dumb bills like this. But she's just also so terrible that you can't usually give her credit.
Like, once Jan Brewer is having to save you from yourself,
like
you have gone astray.
That's a problem.
That's a problem.
That is a real problem.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
Once an actual corpse is...
She's terrifying.
Terrifying.
She's like the chupacabra.
Oh, my God.
You can't look at her.
No, you can't.
Square in the
I know.
Eyes.
I tried to watch her one of her press conferences about this, and I was like... And I already hate press conferences, as you know, so this was like... It was like a real nightmare.
Yeah. No, you can't. She's not to be... She's not
to be watched.
Visual
she's not a visual person.
No.
In any case, good news about Obamacare.
Yeah.
The Affordable Care Act, as we promised months ago to call it, and never actually switched fully to.
Yeah. I know. We said that, and now I'm almost have come back around.
Yeah, well, it's a good thing again.
I was going to say, when we said that, it was like October when only three people could get on the website at one
time. Right, and everyone was saying, everyone was using Obamacare as a put down.
Right. But we have always, you and I have always said that, like, once that website got fixed and people started signing up for it, it wasn't going to be... I think the Republicans are... I'm still not... Everybody thinks that, like, the House of Representatives and even potentially the Senate is all but lost for 2014. And I just don't think that's the case because the Republicans are only running on how big of a giant flaming mess Obamacare is. And it really just sort of, like, isn't anymore.
A big mess.
And I think the Democrats would probably be more... I think they would be better off if they actually sort of said as much. I think too many of them are probably running away from it. But, I mean, we've got 4 million people on it already, almost 700,000 people in the last month. And they're not entirely sure. They had set this goal of 7 million people by the end of March. They're not sort of really entirely sure whether they're going to meet that. There's no way to know. But they think that if they have the kind of surge that they saw in Massachusetts and sort of, like, expect going into, you know, this last month, they're also going to be doing a bigger PR push here too. They might just get there. And that is, even if they'd get sort of close, to think that basically nobody was able to do it for almost two full months, that would be something. That's something to run on. That's something to run a campaign
on. Well, and that's, I mean, the GOP didn't have a plan that even involved 4 million people who didn't have health insurance getting health insurance. Right. So, like, oh well. Like, if we don't make it to 7 million, it's still, I think, worth running on the potential that this, that this shows. Because there's no argument against it. Right. Like, now that the argument had to turn into, like, logistical arguments of actually physically being able to get onto the website, we've sort of run away from the policy being an issue in the first place. That's not what everyone's talking about. That's not what the GOP's been talking about for months.
Right.
They've been talking about how incompetent the administration is and all of these things. They've had to step away from the idea that this is a terrible policy just because they hate it.
Well, right.
So now that the website's working, like, what are they running on? Well, they're going to have to go back and be like, oh, and it's terrible. And everyone's going to be like, no, it's not terrible because I'm on it and I have healthcare now.
Well, that's the thing. I think the Democrats would serve themselves wisely if they were like, you know, let's say we get close to 7 million people. That's not the people who are included on, you know, Medicare expansion. That's not all of the, you know, my assumption is that by the time November rolls around, there's probably going to be, what, I don't know, 10 million people. I mean, I'm just making things up at this point.
That's going to cut our uninsured population by a third.
You as a Democrat say, what, so you want to take all of these, you know, 10 million people off of health insurance that we just got them under Obamacare? Like, that's a campaign.
Yeah.
Right there.
They won't do it because they're terrible at PR.
No, they're dumb.
Like, why are they so terrible at PR?
That's so weird.
And we're actually going to, right after this, talk about why they failed at this the first time, because, you know, with all the Hillary talk in 2016, sort of important to remember why this failed once and what challenges Obama had to overcome and what we can expect him to have to overcome. But it seems like we really have gotten through the part that is the most challenging at this point.
Yeah, the terrible part's over.
It's sort of, you know, clear skies from here on out. In a sense, because once the program is happening, we can complain about issues with the program, but once, like, the way to fix issues with the program is to fix those issues. It's not to end the program.
When we didn't have
the program yet, everyone could be like, well, we just shouldn't have it.
Right.
It's going to cause problems if we start it. But now that it's started, then you don't focus your legislative power on ending it.
Well, that's
focus it on fixing it.
Right. Well, and that's the same with, like, any sort of, you know, government program that people end up getting on. And
people hated Social Security when it was...
Exactly. You can't cut... Now you can't run on cutting Social Security. No. Do you know what I mean? And soon enough, you won't be able to run on cutting Obamacare either because...
Right. People are going to like it.
People,
it's like in Britain. You got to be real fucking sneaky about cutting the NHS there because people really like the NHS. It's inefficient. It has issues for sure. A lot of those were caused by the Conservative Party.
But it's better than not having free healthcare.
By people, you know, defunding the program and stuff like that. But you can't run in the same way that we sort of protect Social Security and sort of, you know, you can come up with sneaky ways to kind of rephrase defunding parts of Social Security and whatnot. But you can't end Social Security. You can't talk about really changing Social Security. You can't talk about changing the NHS in Britain. And I think soon you will only be able to talk about improving Obamacare.
Yeah.
You won't be able to talk about ending it.
Right.
Which is a huge achievement in and of itself.
Yeah.
Because in 2003,
2004... No,
93. I mean 93.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
I know.
In 1993, 94, when the Clintons were trying to pass a similar policy, everything failed spectacularly and it never even got to into the legislative level.
Right.
I mean, this is something that we've been working towards forever. This article really outlines why what Obama did is such a huge achievement.
Right.
Because, obviously, we sort of fault the limited scope of this program a lot because it's fucking ridiculous that we can't just have a fucking single-payer healthcare program in this country. But when we look back at 93, 94, at the kinds of issues that the Clintons ran into trying to propel their own version of this system forward, it's mind-boggling to me that anything passed, because they were running into roadblocks left, right, and center, and it was all egos. It was all, like, part of it was just, like, that they were kind of, like, clashing with Congress because they wanted to sort of be the people that championed this policy, and their advisors were like, no, legislation starts with Congress. You have to get Congress on board. Well, you have to make it look like it was their idea, basically.
Exactly. So, well, basically how we're learning about this sort of now and why this is a news story is because, like, on Friday, the National Archives released a bunch of documents. There was basically, like, a document dump, basically. There were 4,000 pages. And I think it has to do, doesn't have to do with their library or something like that, or just, I don't remember. They're just trying to get them.
There's a sort of statute of limitations on how long these things can be kept confidential. Okay. So 12 years is up or something from when they first were made confidential.
Okay. But we're expecting like 33,000 pages.
There's
going to
be like a trillion pages.
And so there weren't, you know, like a ton of bombshells, but of course people were pouring over them, obviously, because everybody was talking about
ready for Hillary. 2016.
Right. And so, but it appears as though she sort of, you know, she didn't really necessarily like totally bungle the thing, but I mean, like,
it encapsulates a lot of the problems that she has faced historically.
Right, that people are just sort of drawing comparisons to sort of, you know, this document dump and just sort of, you know, her issues as a candidate / person.
Well, and the main issue here, more so, you know, the sort of analysts have said, like, it seems like her advisors gave her all the right advice. That, you know, that you sort of need to consult with Congress closely, that you need to build bridges with the business sector and communicate clearly. And where things really broke down was communicating clearly.
Yeah.
And that's a problem that I think the Clintons have had on this issue forever. And I mean, on a lot of issues, that's a problem that Hillary Clinton
They were very secretive. Like, people were very secretive about it. Like,
it felt like they weren't including everyone in the process.
Right.
It felt like partially they were doing that because they just wanted, like, all the glory of this issue.
Yeah.
But also because they themselves couldn't coordinate what the message was.
Right, and that's how
that was
really,
her campaign.
Right.
It totally was.
And that was how sort of the whole thing fell apart, because basically, like, even the Democrats who sort of, like, started, you know, I mean, there was, you know, Henry Waxman was sort of, like, one of the people who was, like, the biggest proponents and was working with her on it. Like, at a certain point...
Yeah, by August of 93, he was out, too.
He was out because, like, he sort of, like, didn't know what was going on. He didn't feel like they were handling it properly. It was too secretive. You know, he couldn't sell it to his other people that he was working... You know, I mean, like...
There was a meeting with lawmakers where everyone was pissed because there was a copy of the proposal leaked to the New York Times and the Washington Post, and they couldn't get their hands on it. They hadn't seen it. Like, all the Congress leaders that they were supposed to be working with were not being communicated with as effectively as the press, which is a problem. But also, there are some interesting memos from Clinton's aides about how she needs to sort of, like, be careful about her communicating style, if you will. We know she has a sort of tendency to come off as unlikable in interviews and in crowd. And it's funny because, like, she really does the sort of schmoozing part of being a politician really well. She's good on a one-to-one basis, and she's sort of, like, charming when delivering a pre-made speech in front of a room to some degree. But she's not good at answering questions without seeming like a sort of vaguely angry bored person who doesn't want to waste her time with you. And so there's some memos from the 90s sort of talking about, like, don't be defensive in interviews. Look like you want the questions. Even the annoying questions. Give relaxed answers. Look for opportunities for humor. Right. It's important because people always see you in serious situations so that you can't, you know, relate to. Like, things that followed her for years.
Yeah.
This is the beginning of the Clinton campaign's mess up.
And you know what? On some level, I mean, I kind of feel bad for her, because I think that's just sort of like a, you know, if she can be nice to people one-on-one and schmooze,
it's a perception issue. Partially.
It's a perception issue, and it's also sort of like, I think it just probably, there's probably just like an uncomfortableness factor that she has sort of, like, you know, in situations like that, is my guess, probably.
Well, and I think that there's a degree to which women in those situations get sort of unfairly marked as rude and sort of disinterested, and men somehow get away with it.
Right.
Because this happens to a lot of female politicians. Yeah. If they try to get serious, everyone's like, whoa, lady, hold your horses.
Yeah,
so part of that is the problem, for sure.
Yeah.
There's also the degree, however, to which she's, like, super secretive and can't coordinate her own staff with a message
to
communicate.
That campaign was such a big flaming mess in 2008.
I mean, when you have the problem of not looking likable in an interview, at least have your fucking cards lined up everywhere else. Like, you don't line up cards, by the way.
Sure,
you line up ducks in a row.
Uh-huh.
I mean, whatever you line up, have everything together.
Right.
But, like, that's, you need to sort of compensate for that in some area, because, you know, I don't, the mean, Mitt Romney didn't come off as likable in interviews to me. He could have been the president. I mean, if he hadn't made so many ridiculous blunders and, you know, if we hadn't been in the social media age, he was the kind of guy that could have been president. He got very close to becoming the president.
He did.
He's just as much of an asshole in interviews. People just react differently to him, but he also played to his strengths. He was focused on sort of, like, dividing us in a way.
Yeah.
And that sort of distracted everyone from the fact that he was, like, made of cardboard and didn't have any sort of personality to speak of and couldn't sit comfortably in a stool.
Yeah, right.
Do you remember? That was
so good. That was one of the highlights. There were so many good things about him. There was that. There was the lemon wet cold and, like, the whole... I mean, like...
Undipping him.
He was sort of, like, just a... Oh, man. His non-humanness was really just a treat.
I know. So true.
Yeah.
But in any case... The sort of analysis of this has been fascinating. I assume it will continue to be fascinating.
Well, we've got 29,000 more pages left.
A zillion pages left to go. And it's all ridiculous memos with, like, one-line emails, it seems like.
Yeah.
So it's all just, like, maybe we'll have a sort of really gossipy Bridgegate-style hilarious thing that happens. Probably not.
I mean, everybody already, like, what could possibly come out of this that, like, would shock people about the Clintons anyway? I mean, the people who think that they're crazy already think that they're, like, mass murderers and, like, you can't shock these people because, like, they already know that, Bill Clinton is Satan. And,
well, and the people that really like them are willing to overlook any flaw.
Totally.
Clinton supporters are some of the most, like, sort of blindly loyal people I've ever met in my life. So
totally.
With all of that said, something unusual is about to happen.
Yeah, something that Hillary Clinton probably wouldn't approve of. We're about to cut the military spending.
Oh my God.
That's crazy. It's like,
I can't remember a world, because I was still in high school, like, when we were living in a world that was not at war, basically.
I know.
You know, when we were a country not at war, it was before 2001. I don't remember those days. I was a kid.
Yeah, you weren't paying attention to...
I was eating candy bars and riding the subway and rollerblading and things. I was busy with a lot of activities.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I didn't have time to think about military spending, but here we are. Chuck Hagel just released a proposal for a new Pentagon budget, and it would shrink the U.S. military size down to pre-World War II levels.
Yeah, and it's our first non-war budget since 2001. Yeah.
And he said, you know, we can really do this without harming our presence worldwide. We're not at war with a million different countries anymore, so we don't need as many troops as we've had.
Right.
We don't, you know, we want to invest in newer kinds of technology, but we don't want to keep having to invest in old technology that was, like, designed to, like, fight off Soviet tanks and things like that. Most of the cuts are personnel costs. Part of it is that military spending has increased pretty drastically because of all of these wars. That's understandable.
Yeah.
He wants to sort of start capping their raises. But they're also planning to cut staff pretty significantly. The Army would see the biggest cuts, which I'm ready for.
Right?
I don't want people to lose their jobs, but I am ready for this.
Yes.
They're going to cut active duty soldiers by close to 100,000, about 80,000.
Yep.
And then they would also shrink the National Guard and reserve soldiers as well. And then the other branches would see smaller cuts. But they would increase the number of special operations troops. I think this really speaks to the different way in which war is fought.
Well, yeah. I mean,
wars are fought these days. You know, those are the kinds of troops that, like, go in and get bin Laden and do sort of, like, sneaky, you know, I don't know, spy work in my mind. In my mind, it's a lot like spy work. I don't think that's what they actually do.
No.
But they're the ones who do specialized
But there is
missions.
More money for that, too, because this budget also includes money for cyber warfare.
Yeah.
Warfare. I just said war for.
That's a great word.
You know.
I don't think I could repeat it, but it was a great word you just said. But yeah, it's veterans groups are, you know, probably going to protest this, but it fits within the military spending cap that the Bipartisan Budget Act from December, I think, called for. So that's
But Republicans were, of course, flying off the handle
about
they're it.
Fine,
like,
yeah.
And all that, you know, Bill Maher was talking about this on Friday night, and Bill Kristol was on the panel. And Bill Kristol, I mean, wants to never, he's, you know, sort of like
he
a Dick Cheney of the
only
pundit land,
pay for
basically.
The military,
I mean, he sort of never met a, you know, war he didn't like, basically.
Yeah.
So but that's how most Republicans are, slash Hillary
Well,
Clinton.
It's funny because they're, this current group of Republicans has almost sort of abandoned that mantle to a degree. I remember during the last presidential election, I was so surprised that it was like the first presidential election in a long time where I didn't feel like the GOP owned the military issue. I felt like the Democrats really, they were the ones who, you know, wanted to be responsible about bringing the troops home, but also wanted to figure out how we're going to take care of all these veterans,
right.
What we're going to do with all of the, you know, with all of the sort of like people whose lives we've destroyed in the process of this war.
Yeah.
I mean, American lives, obviously, we're not dealing much with.
We haven't been able to run on that in a really long time.
Because and even I felt in 2000, like we owned that.
Even in 2008, I mean, people were obviously in favor of Obama saying that he wanted to end the war in Iraq. But I mean, the real reason that he sort of ended up winning was because of the massive economic meltdown we had sort of going into that election. Everybody felt like he could do that better, because obviously if it came down to military, like, people were going to be voting for John McCain at that
point.
There was
a dichotomy between the GOP owned the idea of being pro-military and he owned the idea of being anti-war. And people were anti-war at that time because it was so fucking expensive to stay in those wars, and there was no reason for it.
Right. Well, but, yeah, by that time, we had already realized that there was no reason
that we should
be. We were
able to overlook the pro-military thing and be like, oh no, we're anti-war. But the idea of the military was still owned by the GOP. The sort of the pro-military party was still the GOP. This last election was not like that at all.
It wasn't all, but because that by that point we had pulled out of Iraq by the time the 2012 election rolled around, and we had also got Bin Laden. So
and I also think the shifting priorities of the GOP sort of didn't leave room for it, because the Tea Party doesn't give a shit about the military. They're up to all sorts of shenanigans that have more to do with hating people and other sort of social issues than, you know, really like international politics that makes sense.
Happy 5-year anniversary to the Tea Party, by the way, too. I didn't pull an article by this, but it was this last week.
You guys have been entertaining for a while now.
They have been.
Yeah.
Yes.
Uh-huh. You're a real treat to have around.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Really ruining the country. One
ruining the country.
Idiot at a time.
Improving our podcast. One idiot at a time. But yeah, so this is a big step, and no one knows, you know, it hasn't passed yet, so no one knows whether this is a thing that can happen.
Yeah.
But I sort of feel like there's not really any sentiment in the country that, like, needs us to increase military spending. As long as we're focusing on things like cyber warfare and sort of specialized outlets that will, like, help us deal with specific types of newfangled attacks.
Right.
We don't need to just have, like, a million troops, like, invading people.
No.
Like, we're...
Or just based all over the
based
place.
Based all over the place, just, like, being threatening
for no
reason.
You don't
need,
like, thousands of troops in Korea for any particular reason.
No.
I mean, you
Koreans
know, it's like...
would like to think that we're on the cusp of invading North Korea.
Right.
We're not.
We are.
Are we?
I mean...
Well, we're on the cusp...
We're not in reality.
We're not in reality.
But we could.
We could.
There's no reason for us to be able to...
If you want to know who's stationed at the North Korean border in South Korea, it is American troops. It is not Korean. It's not South Korean troops. I'm sure they have some South Korean troops there, but it is the U.S. military that is in that hilarious face-off with the North Korean army they just stare at each other across the border.
Yeah.
In other exciting news, I think, and I would argue that this is really our second favorite issue, except, you know, beyond healthcare.
Yeah.
Infrastructure spending
roads.
Is suddenly...
We love roads.
We love roads. And Obama is talking about roads.
He wants
And other things I love, like trains. I love trains. He's talking about trains. He delivered a speech from a train station in St. Paul on Wednesday. That was sort of his big infrastructure spending speech.
Yes.
Where he proposed spending like $302 billion on a transportation plan over the next 4 years that would fund, you know, roads and trains and airplanes and all sorts of things that I love.
And it's funded. He's figured out how to fund
funding,
it.
He's
it's
funding
by
it
closing loopholes
and
tax breaks for corporations.
Yeah.
So it's not, you know, ultimately going to cost anything in the sense that we're going to have to, you know, pay for it by raising a tax or like doing whatever
else.
And
if there's one thing we know from the Great Depression... and that Obama told us anyway in his speech, building infrastructure is
jobs.
A job creator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, any Republican who claims that they want jobs and doesn't want to do infrastructure
better like
spending,
infrastructure.
Then they're lying.
Exactly.
To you. They're a liar.
They're a liar, yeah. Because that's one of the ways that people build roads and things. That's
they
how
do.
You get them built.
We haven't figured out how to have anyone other than people build a road.
Monkeys, horses, none of those are building roads.
Machines.
It's people that
There's
are building
machines
roads.
Machines involved, I'm assuming.
Right,
but I mean,
machines operated by people.
People. There have to be people there.
We in LA haven't seemed to figure out how to find people to do any of these jobs.
No, we don't have those people.
We just have holes.
Lots of holes.
Holes and no people.
Yeah.
We have a lot of people, just not we have people in cars. We don't
if
have
we
people
had,
fixing the
if
people
we had,
car, for
if
the people.
If we had
car.
Some of the extra people around filling holes, we wouldn't have any.
We wouldn't have
there's
exactly.
that many extra
there's,
people.
There's so many. So many. If LA could employ every unemployed person to just start filling potholes in their free time.
Boom.
We would have
That's
beautiful,
it.
Sparkling roads. Just free, dry, free and clear driving.
Yeah, we'd be broke as a city.
We'd be we're broke anyway. Who cares? Sick of. If we're gonna be in a budget crisis, always.
I know.
Let's fucking own it.
Yeah.
I mean,
Fix some roads.
Let's fix some roads.
Do it.
In any case, he also made the good point, I think, that this is sort of something that we need to do to remain competitive.
Well, yeah.
Because if you can go to Abu Dhabi and have a beautifully paved, clean road in which to transport your goods, then, like, you don't need to be coming to fucking Arkansas and having to drive through craters to get, you know, to build a factory in a place like Arkansas where there's no one with specialized skills anyway. And, like, you know, then have to ship from Arkansas, which is in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
To, like, I mean, it doesn't do anything for us if we can't, if we don't have the infrastructure to support business. And this comes back to my favorite thing that Elizabeth Warren stole from me.
Yes.
Which is that, you need that the roads are something that are important to everybody, because not only do you use roads, but the people that hire you to do a job use roads.
Right.
They need roads to get their business done.
They ship goods to you.
They ship goods to you on roads. Your food comes on a road.
Yep.
You know, your Walmart clothing comes on a road.
Yep.
Like, everybody should be paying taxes because they want roads. And this is an opportunity for us to do that without even paying taxes. So I say, let's go for it, guys.
Yeah.
Congress is not going to.
No,
they're
not going to.
Because they hate everyone.
Yeah.
They don't want us to drive on clean, sparkling roads like I'm envisioning in my dreams.
Uh-huh. Well, that's your socialist utopia that you're envisioning.
Yes, I know. It's going to be so nice there.
Yeah.
I'd have a lot of time for sunbathing.
Yeah. sure. Why not?
I just felt like it would be so happy.
I know. You can't sunbathe, though.
No, I know. I wouldn't want to have time for sunbathing. No. We're not people that can be sunbathing.
No. We got some good news this week.
Yeah.
Because, and this was one of the reasons why the Tea Party was sort of like initially created, was of all of this TARP
the
funding,
housing crisis.
Basically. The housing crisis, and just sort of like all the money that, you know, the government spent on bailouts. And Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are now paying back the government more. This quarter, basically, they're going to have paid back with interest the money that they were loaned in September of 2008 as part of the bailout.
There are times that I feel glad that as a nation we thought to elect a Democrat, even one as moderate and sort of lukewarm as Obama. And when we hear these stories of people having finally paid back our bailout funds, as much as I was angry about those bailouts when they happened, I'm thrilled that we had someone with a presence of mind to make them pay us back.
Well, I know.
Feel like with a Republican, we would have paid the bailouts because they weren't going to not bail out their friends at the banks.
No.
But we would have never gotten the money back.
Yeah.
Like, well, I think
and
that was the choice that
well,
we made.
And I know. And I was actually, there was like quite a face-off again on Bill Maher on Friday night, because he talked about this very thing and sort of, you know, because Fannie Mae has paid us back now. AIG has paid us back with interest.
Right. I remember when we reported on that.
You know, a lot of these, the auto industry hasn't fully paid us back, but I think we sold some of the last of the stocks or whatever. I mean, that wasn't sort of like, I think we ended up maybe at a little bit of a loss,
well,
but not
that
enough
was,
that it was that a was situation,
a different
basically,
situation, because
like,
we were also doing that to protect
jobs
in America,
exactly.
Which the bank thing was just money.
No, it was just money.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, I mean, and his point was basically like, maybe socialism works sometimes.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, sort that's, of, that's what this is,
that's
basically.
That's what that
I mean,
ended up being.
The government taking over businesses.
Yeah.
And it sort of didn't end up as terribly as, you know, all the fucking lunatics thought it was going to.
No.
It worked out okay. We're making money on it.
We're making money on it. Well, and that's the mentality that you should go into something like this with, that the Bush administration wouldn't have done it this way. A Romney administration wouldn't have cut a deal where we made more money back than we paid. Like,
I think they're good businessmen,
but they're not allied on the right side of the issue.
Yeah.
Their allegiances are with the wrong people. They're with businesses.
They're with.
I feel like, at the very least, as much as, you know, I feel like Obama is compromised in a lot of ways, I feel like his administration has not been strong on a lot of things that I would like to see, I feel like he was on our side on this, at least.
Yeah.
Which, so I'm always happy when we get this kind of news.
I know.
This is exciting.
It's good news.
It's good news, yeah.
Yeah.
Medium news
that
we have to follow with
is
that it's raining a whole fucking lot here.
Yeah. And I'm gonna take an interesting stance on this one.
I'm excited to hear it.
Because I was talking to somebody about this the other day, and I realized that in the scope of life, it is just rain.
Yes.
But for real reasons, it's an issue here.
Yes.
And I want to tell people what those are, because
well,
I just feel like
remember when you were angry because everyone was sort of underplaying the drought, and you were like, "Well, our food comes from here, so if you guys want to starve, that's fine."
Right.
But that's what's gonna happen.
Right. First off, carry on. Because we are in this drought that we're actually, you know, going
to
talk about.
There's nowhere for the water to go. It's not being absorbed anywhere.
It's not being absorbed anywhere. Weeks ago, yeah. I'm saying weeks, some of the places that are now getting like intense amounts of rain were under a fire watch, basically. Right. Those houses are currently basically sliding down hills right now.
That's what happened.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
Okay? That's a real rain problem.
Yes.
And the other thing is that people like often love to make fun of Californians talking about how it's hard, you know, driving in the rain is a real situation. Driving in the rain here is hard.
It's different.
And let me tell you why. Because when you are in a place that does not rain, that is dry, that has a lot of tires driving on it all the time, you don't have the oils ever come up to the surface of the road because water is what makes that happen.
Right.
So when it doesn't rain for 3 damn years and you get 3 inches of rain,
real slick.
It's like driving on ice.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding.
No.
It is actually like driving on ice. So we get a little crazy, maybe too crazy. But also, to people who don't live here, screw off. Like, because you don't know, you're not sliding around on icy roads watching houses slide down the side of hills.
This is like when Georgia that got all that snow, right? Or Atlanta, got all that snow, and they were like, well, we don't have snow plows, so that's why the whole city shut down.
Yeah.
And we made fun of them because we're those kind of people. and they're making fun of us probably now because they're like, it's just rain, guys, deal with it. But it is very different here to drive in the rain than it is anywhere else. Not only is it that half of the city doesn't know how to drive in the rain,
because
half of the city is not from places where it rains, so you're already at a deficit.
Right.
The number of people who don't remember to turn on their lights is a staggering situation.
Yeah.
But on top of that, there are not the types of reflective lines on the roads that you can see in the rain. So, like, I pulled out in the middle of a rainstorm on the way home from work on Friday and could not see any of the lines on the road. So, I was on an 8-lane road where I didn't know which lane was going in which direction.
It was an icy free-for-all.
So, part of it is visibility issues because... And also part of it is that when it rains here, it just... It's not like in New York, it'll just sort of like rain for a day and it'll just be a an amount of rain.
I was
for
on the
a
way
day.
Home on Friday. It was not raining when I left. All was fine. It takes me 10 minutes to get home. By the time that I got home, it was probably 2 or 3 inches of standing water.
Yeah. No, exactly. It floods here because the rainstorms don't, it's not like a consistent amount of rain all day. There'll be huge downpours and then there'll just be no rain. And you'll be like, oh good, I'm not going to wear my rain boots.
Right.
Like an idiot, because then you go out apartment hunting and you're in the pouring rain and it starts to pour.
It's why you're always wet, because inevitably, whenever you get home, it's not raining and you forget to take your umbrella inside. And then when you want to leave your house again,
you got to get back to your car and that's where your umbrella is.
Right. Yeah. That's how it happens.
But I remember, because I did a semester of college in Vietnam, and there they have sort of like a season where it's just misty all the time, and then a season where they have these huge downpours, and then it's very hot. And when they have the huge downpours, literally all of the streets of Hanoi would just have a foot of water, and people would just be motorbiking through it like that was no big deal. Like, everyone was just like, this is the time of year when there's a foot of water in the street. What can you do? Like, we were, like, stuck in our building because we couldn't get out because there was, like, a loose electrical wire and, like, a foot of water sitting in the courtyard of our building, so we were just, like, trapped there.
Yeah.
The power goes out, like, it's chaos.
Yeah, sure.
That happens here. I tried to drive to Brent's house, which is, what, like...
About a mile and a half.
A mile and a half from my house, down a major street in L.A. in the middle of the rain on Saturday. And, like, literally, it was like I drove in a river to get to his house.
Yeah.
And I don't drive a big car, guys. I was very worried about it floating away. I had moments where I was hydroplaning, and I was not happy about it.
Yeah.
And another issue that I'll just point out, people's windshield wipers don't work here because they get brittle from all the sun. So it's, no one can see.
That's a problem.
There's a lot of problems.
Yeah.
With that said...
Still a problem is the drought. If you think just because we got some rain
out of the woods.
A span of like 3 days to fix the drought, that is not what happens.
No.
Because it's a drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not... The drought is not going anywhere.
Nice in terms of clearing the allergens out of the air.
Sure.
I feel good about the results of this rain because I feel like I'm less allergic than I was at the beginning of it.
Yeah. But basically, you know, I think this this guy, Richard Stapler, who's a spokesman for the California Natural Resources Agency and sort of, like, you know, has been talking about the weather, basically, and stuff. He said it would still have to rain every other day until around May to reach average level or precipitation totals. And even then, we would still be in a drought due to the last 2 years of dry weather. So it's like we're 44% of our average so we're still in a giant disaster. Like 3 days of rain fixed not a thing.
I was saying to Brent as we were reading this, like, I think this, like, our that may be just our weather now. We well, may be in a drought for like, the rest of time.
If you're in a 3-year drought, like, it's like you said, is that a drought?
Yeah.
Or is that just
the weather?
Is that your new weather?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because I think that this is the kind of area where, you know, global warming is a problem for everybody. It's really a problem in places that had limited resources already, though, because it changes the balance of things. And LA had just barely figured out how to function on the amount of water and the amount of water it had and needed, because it has to ship water in from Arizona and other places, basically, to sustain life here and to water everyone's lawns. But let's not get carried away. But when that balance shifts slightly in a place like this, it's very difficult to figure out how to fix things.
Yeah. Because well, and if there's one thing, like, I mean, if there's one place that if it was going to have a giant drought that I would want to live, it would be California, because I implicitly trust that our Democratic legislature and Jerry Brown will sort of have at least some sense of foresight. I mean, there's not necessarily an easy fix.
Right.
But I think that they all sort of recognize that this is a potential long-term problem.
Yeah.
Like, because they've all been saying as much recently anyway. I think they actually passed a bill this week to sort of at least do something in the short term and are going to try and figure out sort of like, we're going to try and sort of figure this out at least as best we can.
Because we're going to admit it's happening.
We can't fix the weather, but we're going to admit that after 3 years of a drought, you may continue to be in a drought and it may be due to global warming.
Yeah.
And even if it's not, then we'll have at least tried to have fixed it when there was still time to fix it.
Exactly.
And if, you know, if next year it rains for 365 days, then we'll just
Have a lot of water.
Thankful.
Yeah.
We'll, you know?
We'll get really good at driving in the rain.
Exactly. Yeah.
In any case, speaking of the environment.
Yes.
Some real bizarre controversy going on
at the Apple shareholders meeting.
Yeah.
But I love it, though, because Tim Cook, their CEO, basically, like, let these wackos have it. The National Center for Public Policy Research, which is like this conservative think tank, basically had previously gotten on Apple's case because they hired like a former EPA head, Lisa Jackson, and are focusing on like sustainability and like a lot of like green efforts and stuff like that. And like basically the reason that they are taking issue with it is because they say that it's costing them more money and it's sort of like hurting the shareholders' bottom line because that money could be used just to go to the bottom line, which is all anybody cares about.
That's crazy because their customer base cares about things like this.
Obviously.
So, like, I can't even imagine how a shareholder in Apple could not
These people who work for the NCPR, or whatever the hell it's called, should just go buy their fucking Dell computers and just be done with
Move
it.
Move on with their lives.
Move on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, these are the kinds of efforts that a company like Apple that has positioned itself as a luxury good that focuses on a sort of educated kind of yuppie market has to do in order to not seem like assholes. Because when we know they're putting stuff together in fucking plants in China and
people are pissed about that. So like you have to sort of like look and see who you're selling to. Yeah. Sort of. You got to know your audience. Yeah. And Tim Cook does because he let these people have it at the shareholders meeting, which was awesome because he said, we do a lot of things for reasons besides profit motive. We want to leave the world better than we found it. If you want me to do things only for return on investment reasons, you should get out of the stock. So he literally just said, if you don't like that we hired somebody from the EPA, then screw
don't
off.
Be, yeah,
and that is
don't
not something that you would normally tell people who are going to be investing in your company. But, like, good for him.
No. Well, I mean, that's I feel like what if you want to be competitive in a market that you have created like Apple's, you can't fuck around with these people. You don't need stockholders like that. There's a million people who are willing to buy Apple stock who aren't going to be upset that you're spending money on, you know, environmental assessments and stuff like that. Like, those are people that will understand that the value of the company increases when you do that. It's not just about the actual, like, short-term profits.
Right.
So, in any case, in great news.
Great final news.
Yeah. There's a Noah's Ark theme park that's been in the works for a while in Kentucky, and it is finally happening.
Oh, God. And it happened for sort of like the most hilarious of reasons, too, because basically it got sort of in 2010, it's been stumbling around for like 3 years because it basically ran out of funding.
Yeah.
So
not surprisingly.
Not surprisingly. But the reason that it sort of like got this last funding push is because Ken Hahn, the guy who runs Answers in Genesis, which is like there's none there.
No.
Don't be looking
for answers.
Don't
be looking
for
answers there.
You won't find them. No. Anyway, that's a wacko Christian ministry group. And Ken Hahn, like I said, is the founder. He was the guy who debated Bill Nye on creationism, like, just earlier in this month, basically. And then Funding
appeared.
All the crazies reappeared to come out of the woodwork. And I think the city also actually offered some bonds, too, or something like that, basically. But, like, whatever. I mean, it's going to be in Kentucky, so I'm sure they're excited to have it. Yeah. But,
and it's going to be awesome.
It's going to be awesome. It's going to cost $120 million.
That's too much money to spend on this theme park.
Right. I would like to go once it's built.
Sounds great.
It sounds great.
It's going to be a petting zoo. There's going to be animal shows.
Right. What is that?
I don't know. No one knows. A special effects theater?
A rustic first century
that's
village.
That's what I'm excited about. Right,
and my favorite, a Tower of Babel.
You know, the physical item, a Tower of Babel.
But of course, people aren't happy about this for obvious reasons, because, like, they're treating it sort of like...
An educational theme park.
Yeah, it's a museum.
Yeah.
The Noah's Ark Museum.
It's like that theme park, wherever it is, where they have the dinosaurs walking with men and whatever, you know.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they're going to put dinosaurs on this ark.
Probably.
They were there.
They were animals.
They think that they were there. Yeah. Right.
There were a lot of animals there. Any animal that you can think of was on the ark.
Yeah. They're going to call it the Ark Encounter.
Yes.
It sounds like a... And there's aliens involved, too.
It totally does.
Right?
It sounds awesome. Whatever it sounds
for
like.
For sure.
It sounds like it's going to be one of the great American theme parks that is misleading our youth. Filling them with lies.
But the only people who are going to be taking people there are going to be people who are probably have already been misled at home
Say, this sounds like a fun place to visit, except that everyone else who would be there would be a kind of person you wouldn't want to run into.
No.
In a theme park or not in a theme, anywhere. No. So
you'd have to pretend you were one of them if you were there, or else you could run into some serious problems.
I could never do that. After my issues at your Christmas concert.
Right.
We know for a fact that I could just never...
You wouldn't be able to listen to any of the things people were telling you with a straight face.
No, it would be a disaster.
Oh, God. Yeah.
So in any case, that's the news this week. We will alert you as to our 100th anniversary plans...
Yes, next week.
...when we know what they are. We're not good planners.
We'll figure it out.
We're going to have to think about this a little.
We'll have an update from our roller skating party.
We totally will have an update from our roller skating party. We're throwing a roller skating party.
Yeah, it's not for anything in particular.
No, it's just a reasonless, random roller skating party that we decided to throw.
Yeah, you don't need to have a reason.
Roller skating's fun. No, exactly. We're not seven. We don't need a birthday to happen to have a roller skating party.
No.
We're all adults. We can just go roller skating anytime we want.
Yeah.
So in any case, we'll have updates from that. We'll probably have updates from Ukraine. That seems to be where the world is heading right now.
Russia,
right. We might be at war with Russia by next week. I do not want to get into a war with them.
Ugh.
They probably don't play nice. It's not like rule following war where everyone is really diplomatic and they march in unison to places and then just like agree to fire at one time.
That's not what happens.
That's probably not what happens with wars with Russia. So, but we'll update you throughout the week as always, except for last week, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.